Welcome to today's discussion on the new reality of connected infrastructure and continuous connectivity in an unpredictable world. So, over the last decade, connected infrastructure has become the backbone of modern operations, whether that's managing electric grids, monitoring pipelines, tracking transportation assets, even supporting precision agriculture, or protecting critical government infrastructure. Organizations are increasingly relying on connected technologies to operate safely and efficiently. At the same time, the world's become somewhat more unpredictable, and IoT solution requirements have become more exacting. There are more extreme weather events, expanding remote operations, aging infrastructure, evolving security concerns, and rising customer expectations have changed how organizations think about connectivity. So increasingly, connectivity isn't simply about collecting data. It's about ensuring that operations continue, regardless of location or circumstance. So today we're exploring how resilient communications are reshaping industrial IoT and why organizations are building connectivity strategies designed not just for normal operations, but for the unexpected. So I'm delighted to be joined today by Pierre Laporte, who is president of Traxent, and also Marty Jefferson, who is global solutions architect with Globalstar. Pierre, Marty, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Fantastic. So just to get the discussion going, for many years, connectivity was viewed primarily as a technology decision. Organizations selected a network, connected their assets, and focused on collecting operational data. But today, that conversation has somewhat evolved, and organizations increasingly recognize that connectivity directly affects business continuity, things like worker safety, operational efficiency, customer satisfaction, and even regulatory compliance. So as connected assets become more essential to daily operations, maintaining communications during disruptions has become really just as important as maintaining communications during normal conditions, and possibly more so. From an analyst perspective, one of the market dynamics that we've observed is that organizations are no longer asking simply how to connect remote assets. Rather, they're asking how to remain connected when conditions become difficult or unpredictable. So that's an important but subtle shift. So Pierre, because you're working directly with organizations deploying these solutions, I'd like to start with you. How have your customer conversations changed over the past 5 years?
It has been quite a drastic change, I would say. I'm in the business for over 23, 24 years, so I could even give a more lookout than more than 5 years. But basically, in the last 5 to 10 years, we saw drastic change. Initially, most of the questions were always, can we connect this asset in this area? Do we have coverage there? And that was always to answer a very used question. It was for a specific use case. They need coverage somewhere to do something. No, the question is never around coverage. Most of the people tend to not even talk about satellite. Actually, they talk about connectivity. They talk about network consistency. And most of the time, not always, of course, we still have people just asking for coverage, but no, we have more and more people. They have operations somewhere. They use VHF, they use cellular, sometimes they use satellite and they don't even know that. And they just want to be sure that they will have the same operation, the same way of working, that it will not disrupt any time. And this is what they're looking for. On our side, we see that because we have more and more customers that are mixing technology, actually. But at the end, they use the same tool. So we are just in the middle trying to give connectivity, of course. But customer is not specifically asking for coverage. They're just speaking about continuing their operation wherever they are. And then that's our job to know what we can offer them. So yes, of course, satellite is one of the main response, but a very good example of that is 5 years ago, we never had an integrators, industrial manufacturer that were asking for connectivity. They were always doing their own connectivity on their side using cellular, sometimes fiber optic, radio, these kind of things. And we have more and more of those companies just asking to provide more connectivity and backup solutions or just a resilient ways of operating their usual meters or sensors. And basically, we have more and more customers requiring us as a middleware and not only as providing a satellite device with a satellite connection. They just want to receive their data the same way than before. And we're just there to make sure that we can give them the full connectivity for always. So it's really noticeable, and this is more and more the case. Really, we have more and more inquiry to have hybrid connections so that it never stops.
So are any customers, you know, asking specifically for satellite technology, potentially leading ones or one in specific sectors? Are they all really just laser focused on solving those business problems?
Yeah, definitely. It's more about solving their business problem. Of course, I would say that, well, we are here with Globalstar, but let's all be honest, Starlink drastically changed the way people know about satellite. And one of the drawback is that people don't see satellite as something expensive anymore and as something that nobody can afford. I mean, you can go to any retail shop and get a Starlink kit. And I would say that their marketing, their brand, their image recognition made satellite more affordable for anyone and changed the way people see that. Of course, Globalstar is definitely very different, and we are speaking about more IoT, small data package. So the customer are definitely not mass market. They are more industrial company, forestries, NGOs, industrial applications that use that to send their very important data to their own headquarters, to their own interface. But basically, the question is not about, that's going to be expensive. How can we do different? And in the past, that was not even the question. The question was that, is that possible or not? And will that cost as much as I think? No, it's not anymore a question. Definitely, price is not even a question. There's so much players around and so much public information available that everybody knows that the price is not going to kill a project. So price and coverage is definitely not the variable of the requirement of a customer. Of course, they still ask questions about coverage, throughputs, but that's not even the way they ask questions. It's just, we want to send, I don't know, videos. Is this coverage and this satellite able to do that? So that's the main difference, I would say. It's not about price and coverage availability. It's more about what would be the best deal. And then they suddenly not even talk about satellite. It's just what's the best network solution that we can bring on that. Of course, we're a satellite specialist, so we always try to push to satellite, but we're also a software provider. We provide the platform, the web interface, and we merge a lot of different devices. So our job is also to make sure that we bring the best connectivity to the requirement, to the customer's requirement.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to bring Marty in at this point because, Pierre, you've described a very rapid evolution in awareness and also an evolution in expectations from satellite. That's not expressed in terms of what satellite can deliver. It's expressed in terms of what the solution needs to be, but it has consequences, of course. And Marty, you're seeing this from both a technology and a solution architecture perspective. So has the role of satellite connectivity changed within enterprise IoT? I guess from Globalstar's perspective as a satellite operator, the effects that Pierre has described, it resulted in a marked increase in the number and diversity of projects that you support.
I think in general, where the biggest change that I've seen in recent years, and I'm an 18-year veteran too, so I've been around a long time, I would say satellites become more mainstream than ever. It used to be kind of the last line of defense, something that was very, very expensive, something that was very exclusive, had very few terminals, very few choices when it came out there. And what we've seen over the years, it's been brought more into the mainstream through, you know, some retail channels where satellite is running in the retail channels. And when satellite is becoming more mainstream, more from the customer demand of who their vendors are, we're seeing more and more consolidation in the customer saying, I don't care where you get my connectivity. You just need to go find whatever connectivity I need to solve my problem. So you get some of the big guys in the world, the big cellular carriers, going out there and shopping for whatever they have and then whatever they don't have. So you're not necessarily a prime contractor on a contract. Maybe you're a subcontractor somewhere down the road. But what you're seeing is customer wants somebody to own the connectivity solution and then go and find all the bits and pieces of that solution. That is a big change. Whereas somebody would go out and do most of that stuff themselves and maybe have four or five or six different vendor relationships, I'm seeing more and more now they want one prime, take care of everything, network this, take care of my security, get me my connectivity from point A to point B, and choose the best available solution that's out there. whether that be terrestrial, whether it be fiber, whether it be satellite, whether it be, you know, some of the other small packet data, so LoRaWAN, that type of thing. There's a place for everybody in this ecosystem. And what we're seeing from a general statement is where satellite has been introduced into the mainstream, you know, kind of behind the scene and the directed device stuff that's going on out there in the retail space, through some of the recreational products that are out there. It's no longer just being this little orphan island that sits out all by itself.
So from an end user perspective, there's a much more turnkey demand in terms of somebody providing a solution. But then from the vendor select perspective, it's almost the reverse in terms of this fundamental agnosticism as to where that connectivity comes from and just stitching together coverage.
I mean, I see with my children and their phones, you know, and if for whatever reason the Wi-Fi goes down or they hit a bad spot and cellular, they look at me like I have two heads. They're like, well, how can this happen in this world? But it wasn't that long ago that that used to happen all the time. Now it's a given that connectivity should be there. And I don't care what technology drives that connectivity. Yeah. It just should be there all the time.
So we're looking at the end user markets. What industries have accelerated adoption and this kind of changing mindset the fastest?
Certainly, I would say that the largest one is transportation and logistics. Yep. I mean, satellite adoption has been very strong in the oil and gas industry, where you're exploring, you're going off the beaten track, you're going somewhere where there's very little population to dig or drill or explore. But the demands of the consumer demanding more visibility to everything that gets moved from point A to point B, whether that be food, whether that be goods and services, they're demanding more and more visibility to that kind of operation. And the only way to do that is to have some kind of hybrid solution that's going to work where it works, where connectivity is available. And then, of course, you know, when you've got the off-grid stuff, then it gives you the visibility there. I would say that's the biggest industry, at least in our space anyway, that's driving the marketplace to this convergence.
Definitely, I think so. Certainly in my experience, I think you've pointed to the right places. But just moving on a little and thinking about what connectivity means. I mean, we've discussed pulling together various sources or various providers to provide a connectivity solution. The characteristics of that connectivity will be different fundamentally, satellite versus cellular and versus Wi-Fi potentially. So let's focus on connectivity really means. And as you mentioned, your kids, who no doubt blame you when you go through a not spot, always connected has become a popular phrase across the IoT industry. But for enterprise IoT, continuous connectivity doesn't necessarily mean constant communication. Instead, it means organizations having confidence that critical information can be exchanged wherever, you know, operational decisions depend on it. And so for infrastructure operators, for example, resilience isn't measured by bandwidth, it's measured by reliability and whether the message, the critical messages get through. And it's knowing that critical assets remain visible during storms, equipment failures, remote deployments, network outages, or simply if an asset happens to be passing through an area where the cellular coverage is a bit flaky. And that's a very different conversation from simply checking whether a device has a signal when it's deployed. So, Marty, I'll come back to you again on this one. Let's start by defining exactly what resilient connectivity actually looks like. And what's the definition of that from an engineering perspective?
Well, it's really a couple of different things. I mean, ultimately, if it's something that's a reliable communication path under all conditions, and all conditions is always the important part, to have diverse communication pathways. Single technologies are always, or potentially are, sources of downtime. Everybody has network issues from time to time. Something that's predictable. You know, in the IoT space where we live, we're not an always-on connection. In fact, we're battery operated most times. So we need to be asleep. We need to be conserving power and really reporting those actionable pieces of data. And then it's really about your architecture rather than the individual technologies, right? So how do you do failover from one to the other? How do you manage? How do you monitor the different solutions that you've got, which is part of your overall communication strategy or infrastructure? And then, of course, you know, I talked about it before, the importance to be able to conserve power. Power is the first thing to go in a natural disaster. Power is the first thing, you know, where you get a challenge, where you're in the middle of nowhere. Power is the first thing you need to start worrying about, whether it be the battery in your phone, the battery in your vehicle, the battery in whatever. You need to make sure you conserve as much as you can. And then, you know, it's got to be thought up front, right? So you've got to think about this before you deploy. It's very difficult to take a system, deploy a solution out there, and then start trying to fill in the holes that you find in your strategy. Yeah. That's much more difficult to do than designing something up front that has these resilient pathways, these nuances to them that you could actually get to work.
Yeah, definitely. What I'd like to now shift and look at this same kind of concept, but more from a customer perspective. So, Pierre, how do the things and this resilience and robustness that Marty's described, how does that translate into customer operations? And what does continuous connectivity enable your customers to do differently?
That's an interesting question. While Marty was explaining that, I was thinking about also a drastic change I saw, for example, with the humanitarian. We work a lot with humanitarian, of course. They are like the oil and gas, these kind of sectors that always historically use a lot of satellite links. And until very recent years, they just took satellite device for mostly emergency need. And that was not even a backup. That was, well, that might work. That might save my life somewhere at a point. So that was about the last mile connectivity. I would say that for all those humanitarians, this is something that is no sure. They can have connectivity. It's not about, will that work the day we will need it? They know it will work. They know that's 5, 6, 7 years that there's really reliable technology that give them this connectivity. So the question is not about anymore for those people, for example, will we be able to send an emergency alerts when we need it? The idea is more now that they need to fine-tune their process. And this is the question they come with. They want to be sure that, well, this technology might work, but is there a better one? We used to only take care about emergency, but maybe we can do some monitoring of the movements we do, still for a security reasons, but not only, still speaking about these humanitarians, since 5, 6 years, they want to monitor the parcel, the scent, the medicine, for example, the temperature inside their truck. So it's getting different. They get more and more questions. And the question is not anymore, will we be able to send those data? Then no, it can be possible. The question is more, we want to be sure that those data will always be sent. When we will be in the city, satellite might not work well, but we still need this data. When we are out of the cities, we will probably have no more satellite. And last thing, very special about humanitarian, but not only, they're operating in sometimes complex countries with a lot of political things. And resilience is also about that. It's not about connectivity if something technically don't work. It's also something about politically. Let's say you're in a country where someone decide to cut the terrestrial network, then you're screwed up. So their reasoning now is more about what will happen if politically the country is not stable, they cut the networks, what will happen? And this is the question they have since 2, 3, 4 years. And really, this is something we see among all humanitarians now. So that is something that they do very differently, for sure. And the simplest way I would put it is that this resilience, it's really the idea of replacing uncertainty with decisions. And there's no more rooms to not be able to take the correct decisions because of a lack of network. And that's really, I think, the resilience dimensions for the end users. And everything that Marty described is, of course, of paramount importance, but definitely it's the hidden face of the iceberg. And the end user, it's not that they don't want to see that, but that's part of what we need to provide them. But for them, definitely it's just about being able to operate anywhere. And if something happened, not only technically, how can they respond that? And there's multiple answers from mixing satellite networks, mixing technology, having backup device of the backup device. Things are changing. Also, what is important, if I continue with the same example, I would say that they now have understood that pushing a SOS button and sending an emergency alert is not going to help them, because basically they will never have time to push the SOS button. So they also understand, and this has been a shift where initially satellite was a lot about the last thing we can do to help them on the field. And now it's more about supporting their current operations the same way they do where they have terrestrial network. Everything about emergency is still important, but this is, if they see that there is an emergency, it's because they will have studied the monitoring of the movement. They will have understood that, well, a truck has not arrived at the estimated time of arrival, so something is wrong. And then they have a process behind that. If this is 10, 15, 1 hour late on the estimated time of arrival, then we call them on the sat phone, for example, or we ask them to push a button to send a check-in. So process has changed internally for the end users because they know they can rely on the technology now, what was definitely not the case before.
So this is effectively about pulling together a connectivity platform, which then can be used to enable operations in a more consistent way and know that you're going to get that information so that you can operate in a consistent way. And by the way, particularly at those particularly critical points where something goes wrong on the ground or there's a terrestrial network failure or a power cut or something.
Yes. Totally. What we do at Traxsat is definitely a mix between the hardware, the airtime from Globalstar, the satellite airtime, and indeed the web interface where the users is doing the most of their operations. And yes, I would say this is not the clever part because all party is important, but I would say this is where they can translate their process into actionable behaviors and monitoring. So yes, this is definitely part of the equation. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you. And it kind of prompts the next topic, I think, because it feels like we should evolve now to focus on some of those business outcomes, frankly, because it's easy for us in the IoT community to talk about technology, but technology is only valuable if it improves business outcomes. So, a frequently recurring dynamic across industrial IoT is that organizations, they often begin with projects looking for better visibility, fairly simple requirement, but quickly discover benefits that extol went well beyond tracking and that basic visibility. And those could be things like, and you've described many of them, but they could be things like improved productivity, reduced downtime, lower maintenance costs, greater worker safety, particularly critical in some of the contexts you've mentioned there, and faster response times, and so on, many more. So in many cases, resilient connectivity becomes an operational advantage rather than simply an IT investment. So Pierre, I'd love to hear some more real-world experiences. Can you share examples of where resilient connectivity fundamentally improved customer operations?
Yes, let's take a recent one. Interesting, because I learned it with the customer, actually. It's a rather technologic company, and they are manufacturing some bios that they leave in the sea for various reasons. Their own customers can be a university for study reasons, but their main customers is mostly the French Gov, because they use signaling bios in the North Manche. They leave these bios in the channels, and they use to, for those very close from the shore, they use sometimes cellular, sometimes with very high frequency antenna to broaden this area. They use sometimes some VHF too. They tried some mesh technology, and basically they still have some of those bios using those mix of technology. But basically they had one, sometimes two people always patrolling all the bios with a boat, checking that there is battery, checking that device is still attached, and overall checking that the BIOS is still where it's supposed to be. Those are static BIOS that are supposed to not move because there are signaling BIOS. And actually, they had a terrible cost with that. And they approach us with the requirement to just have a backup in case their usual technology is not working so that they can use the satellite. And I would say very quickly after like the first campaign, after 3 months, they look at the bill of how much it cost them to send technicians on the boat every day. Because during those 3 months, they didn't have to send the boat at all. They had one report every 4 hours from the BIOS all the time. So they knew all the time. They were able to always see that the BIOS were not moving. And when they had an alert about the BIOS moving from their geofence that they draw from the web interface, it was indeed a real case. And they just went for this specific alert and this specific unwanted movement. And the result is very clear, is that they came for a resilient connectivity to backup, not resilient, I would say, came for a backup of their initial technology. And actually, they are removing all the terrestrial technology they were using, and they are only putting some Globalstar smart one on all the BIOS. And this is costing a bit more on the hardware side of thing, but just because they don't use the technician and the boat every day, they are reimbursed like 10 times in 3 months, the price of the airtime and the price of the hardware. So it's more than a winning for them. It's just that they see things very differently. Yeah. And they put those smart one in every BIOS they sell, even to older customers. And this is no part of the product. So what is important there is that actually it's really part of the product. It's an option they sell to their own customers that want BIOS. And they sell that not only as a monitoring, but also as an insurance. So they really made business out of there.
So, yeah, I mean, it's really easy, as you describe that, it's really just easy to see in that kind of context how very significant savings can be unlocked really quickly, straight just from a basic implementation there. But, Marty, I'd like to discuss or understand how these kind of themes might play across different industries. Are there any common patterns that emerge across different industries? And are there any things that customers are consistently trying to accomplish regardless of industry?
Yeah, I think probably the most consistent thing I see when people implement some kind of asset management solution, and it really is an asset management solution, it's not a tracking solution, is that generally speaking, people have too many field assets for the amount of work that they're doing.
Yeah.
Either too many trailers for the amount of goods that they're transporting, too many rail cars for the amount of goods that they're doing. And a lot of this gear, once it leaves the home yard and gets spread out all over the country or all over the world, you lose the visibility to it and it becomes a non-asset or not an available asset. Now, in the transportation space, there's some really easy metrics to talk about it, real dollars and cents. So in North America, it costs approximately $600 US to insure and maintain a transport trailer, roughly a month, something like that. And without visibility, what ends up happening is people hang on to your gear too long when you're dropping off trailers. That's a thing called dwell, where they grab your trailer and they use it to shunt things around in their own yard. They put mileage on your trailer without you knowing about it. There's detention, where they're just not unloading it quickly enough. And all of these things have dollars and cents associated with it. The $600 a month comes into knowing and being able to track your utilization of your assets. Are you running at 95% capacity? Are you running at 50% capacity? The general rule of thumb is an unmonitored fleet runs at somewhere to 50 to 70% efficiency. So there's 30% of the time where you've got assets out there that could be earning revenue, but they're not actually earning revenue because you don't know where they are, or you don't know whether they're full or empty, or you don't know whether they're available or not for work. What that translates to is roughly 10% of your fleet is unused at any given time. So if you take a fleet of 1,000 trailers costing you $600 a month per trailer, right? That's $60,000, 10%, $60,000 in lost revenue every month that goes by. That actually pays for your implementation costs, your hardware, your airtime for managing that fleet, reduces the number of assets that you have, and gets you running at that 90, 95% efficiency. And that, I think, is probably what people are most surprised at when they start implementing these solutions, about how blind they truly were and how much money was floating out the door and the open windows and things like that. Because it is real dollars and cents.
Yes, so and in fact, I very much like that characterization of having too many field assets. You know, the usual discussion is around efficiency of use of field assets. And that's a fairly dry discussion. But to roll up to a fleet manager and say, you've got too many field assets, is a really quite compelling statement. And they're likely to listen to the next thing that might be said.
Yes.
But let's just see some of the dynamics behind this. How has this changed compared to 5 years ago? Has there been a significant change, a step change? I mean, Pierre mentioned some of the noise around just satellite generally.
You know what? I think everybody is trying to do more with less. Right? You know, every marketplace, every industry gets more and more competitive, especially on a global basis, right? You know, we're now competing with not just people in your local area, but you're competing globally with many, many people in many different industries. And I think the businesses that are employing technology to become more efficient in whatever they're doing, whether it be dispatch software, whether it be something that manages maintenance better rather than doing maintenance on schedule, now you do it on engine hours or mileage, right? Things that you didn't have. These small pieces of data that you didn't have access to before, again, makes you more efficient, makes you able to squeeze higher margins out of your product, especially when you're talking about very low margin things. And I got a great example of that. In North America, especially in the northern area, a lot of people use liquid propane to heat their homes, to cook with, where there isn't, you know, in the ground natural gas infrastructure, that type of thing. But propane is a really, really inexpensive, very low margin commodity. So you never, ever want to send a truck to go and fill up a propane tank that doesn't need filling, right? Yeah. So unless you know that that tank is below 75% capacity, you know, you've got 75% room, then it is not economically viable for you to put a man in a truck and send the truck out there to fill the tank. So having that connectivity, a simple once a week piece of data, a little 9-byte piece of data saying, I'm 25% full, I'm 18% full, that allows the industry to extract the maximum profit out of something that has a very minimal margin in it. So again, making those business decisions based on tiny pieces of information to ultimately become more profitable. And that's what all businesses are always looking to do.
Absolutely. And you kind of highlighted how that becomes a competitive differentiator, because if one company doesn't do it and their competitor does it, well, they're going to get outcompeted. So it becomes critical.
Well, I am also seeing some extra value add from the people that are really intelligent about it. And they're like, they're adding this visibility that they have and make decisions every single day as a competitive differentiator to their customers. Another quick example, got somebody who's a courier, sends stuff from point A to point B. Right now, we have great visibility with the big couriers about where's your package, when's it going to show up? You know, it's going to come between this window and this window. But in the very large truckload courier, very large cargo, you don't quite have that same kind of visibility. So we've got one partner that takes the data that comes from satellite and takes that data and embeds a quick link in their software and sends that link to the customer and say, watch your cargo. So they see the cargo get unloaded at one part of the country. They see it get put onto a train. They see it moving across the country. And they can plan whatever process that machinery, that those goods are actually driving at the other end, because they have real-time visibility to it in transit, where it's not necessarily where it's been, where it's going. It's they get that visibility in between. And again, value add, then they're different than their competitor that way. So,
and critically, that's downstream efficiency outside of the business which is deploying the solution, and that's value-added service and a differentiating service.
Yes, exactly.
So we've talked about various aspects here. What I'd like to do is focus a little on combining satellite and cellular. We skipped over that a little bit at the beginning. And I think one of the biggest misconceptions around satellite IoT is that organizations must choose between terrestrial and satellite. But in reality, the opposite is happening. They're still kind of converging. And it seems to me that, you know, the strongest architectures increasingly combine multiple connectivity technologies that allow organizations to leverage the strengths of each, but minimize individual limitations. So rather than asking which network should we use, organizations are increasingly asking, how do we build communications that remain available regardless of what happens? So, Martin, perhaps you can comment on why you think hybrid architectures are becoming so important.
Yeah, so hybrid has been around for a number of years. It's not really a new technology, but from a hardware perspective, it was always a multi-radio solution. So you had a box that has cell modem in it, it had a sat modem in it, had a Wi-Fi modem in it, had some other technology in it. And each one of those adds cost to the hardware. So the hardware gets bigger, it gets more expensive, becomes more exclusive. And then you've got multiple subscriptions that you need to worry about in many cases. So it was around, were driven by very specific large consumers of data. You know, some of the very large global manufacturers were driving this. And finally, technology has caught up to where we need to be for more of a mass deployment. Now we've got software-defined radios that will support the terrestrial waveform and the satellite waveform in the same radio, which, of course, economies of scale, single radio, you know, multi-mode solution in a device is no more expensive than a single-mode solution. That combined with the proliferation of MVNOs, as we call it, or people offering connectivity all over the world very inexpensively through SIM cards, eSIMs, things like that. Now you could bring a very cost-effective solution into a single platform, bill it out of one invoice where you've got the brains of the device to say, okay, what network is the best one for me right now? I can see this network, I can see this network, I can see this network. I'm going to choose the least cost. We call that least cost routing. So the actual power at the edge of the device to make these decisions is making them much more easy to deploy in the field. So you take the combination of the hardware is now competitively priced. The networks are more competitively priced than ever before. Yeah. The consumers are demanding connectivity no matter what. It's only a natural evolution to supply the multimode. And as Pierre mentioned before, at the time, they don't have any idea what connectivity they're using. They don't care. Just whatever works, right? Whatever works. Do the thinking on the device. Make sure you choose the cheapest or the least expensive network that's available. and just get my data from point A to point B.
And Pierre, just coming to you, I mean, it very much sounds like that would be correct. I mean, customers aren't thinking in terms of, you know, I need a cellular network or I need a satellite network or whatever it is that they're thinking. They just want outcomes.
Yeah, I have a very good example of a customer in Mozambique. They were a public transportation agency and they came to ask primary a satellite link for their bus. And when we discussed, I saw that they were mostly in the cities, but they were continuing. We want satellite, we want satellite. I still have no idea why they absolutely wanted satellite, but I managed to get them a hybrid device with cellular and satellite. And at the end, 95% of the time they are over cellular and they never came back to me to ask why we don't pay that much on the satellite link. Well, because you don't use it actually. And that's just to jump on what Marty said, that they just have no idea actually what link they use. It's just that after 1 year or two, they were just surprised that they don't have that much satellite use built over that they use it, because basically they don't use it. The only time they use it, it was because there was a shutdown of the network in the cities, and that's it. I also want to react on the hybrid hardware. Indeed, that's quite old things, hybrid hardware. And I would say that we tend to see less and less hybrid hardware, probably for the reason that Marty explained it. It's two different subscriptions. It's one SIM card. It can be quite complex. There's two, three antennas to put on the roof sometimes if you speak about the vehicle. So that's not that discreet. And it's complexified things for the maintenance and so on. And I would say that 10 years, 15 years ago, that was already existing. But the main reason for those use was really on budget, because satellite was very expensive. So the idea was, well, we will use cellular most of the time, and having a hybrid device will just allow us to pay a lot less. Nowadays, specifically about Globalstar, they are so cheap in terms of hardware and airtime that I have dozens and dozens of examples where actually deploying satellite only is cheaper than deploying a cellular tracker. I also have dozens of examples where actually some Globalstar satellite device are better than any other cellular. And there is a small Globalstar cellular satellite solar device. I mean, there's not even a device that have the same behavior and the same great performance. And there's nothing available on the cellular world. I mean, I've been looking for years on something similar on the cellular world. Yes, this one, Marty, exactly. We have a big project to monitor the Hajj and the Pilgrim. So that could be also used on animals, on people. And actually, we were looking for something cellular, but we didn't find. And we did the proof of concept with this small device because actually there's no alternative. So at the end, I just wanted to point out that in my own conceptions, when I'm talking about hybrid, I'm not even specifically talking about the hardware, but more about the fact that the end user will be able to use multiple technology depending upon their use, but then have the same tool and receive the data in the same server, in the same interface, in the same geographical interface or anything. And that's where I would say hybrid, in my own opinion, is important. And I'm particularly glad to speak about that because this is really one of the main reasons I founded Traxsat, actually. That was to have an agnostic platform that can receive data from any kind of satellite, any kind of cellular, any kind of radios. And at the end, what I see from my customers is that they don't really care what kind of device they will use, because they will coexist in the same interface and they will be able to talk together. I have a lot of example, again, with humanitarian, where they have some ICOM VHF, for example, and they're able to send a text message to a Globalstar Spot X. And the same way this Globalstar Spot X is able to send a text or trigger an SOS to an Android app, and everything is coexisting in the same interface. So for the customer, it's not about what kind of device we will use. It's more about what's the best tool that we can have on the field, and that's it. So it can be because of the form factor, because of the price, because it's a vehicle, a plane, a boat. All devices are not the same. So each device do have some particularity that make it special for the end users. And one only device cannot answer all the requirements. And that's my own conception of hybrid connectivity, because actually, hybrid device by itself, they will probably die with the advent of the NTN and D2D. I would say that in 2 or 3 years, we will probably not even have this kind of discussions, and probably We will just have smartphones with the satellite links, and we will not even maybe use telematic boxes, but just app on some Android tablet. So I do think that might be a sense of the future.
Yes, and in fact, the future is the next topic I wanted to move on to, because I think we should polish our crystal balls a little, see what might be coming. It strikes me, if the last decade focused on connecting assets, the next decade is likely to focus more on enabling autonomous operations and doing more, having established that baseline. So, you know, organizations deploying more sensors than ever before, the assets are becoming increasingly intelligent, artificial intelligence is transforming analytics and the potential of what can be done with data, and remote operations continue expanding. And against that backdrop, resilient connectivity becomes an even more important consideration, because autonomous systems are only as reliable as the communications that support them. So, Marty, looking ahead, what technologies do you think will have the greatest impact over the next 5 years?
I think the two that will probably have the biggest influence, obviously, is AI in one form or another. The power to analyze the amount of data that the tools that are available today can do is amazing. And it's game-changing from my daily life of doing a PowerPoint presentation for somebody to somebody plugging in a new code, a new firmware that they've written, and asking it to tell it where you've made a mistake. Those type of things from an efficiency perspective, huge. As computers become more and more efficient and smaller, we're going to see more decisions at the edge. There's no question. And if you can get AI into that mix of decision at the edge, then you can offload a lot of traffic from the networks, right? Ultimately make your connectivity costs go down and actually make decisions locally and autonomously from necessarily, you know, reporting back and then controlling over the air. In many sort of instances where you're monitoring a process, a remote field, a remote something, time is of the essence when something goes wrong. So if you have the ability to make decisions locally, take immediate instantaneous action, and also report that to a data center, that I think you're going to see where we're going to continue to grow. I also think we're going to see other connected assets and assets like you never thought about before. You know, I talk about the connected cow. We connect cows to do disease management on cattle. If you'd asked me that 10 years ago, I said, no, you're crazy. We're not going to have a satellite device that's on a cow and can tell you based on its movement, whether it has mad cow or new world screw worm or whatever disease is being watched. Now they're getting more and more sophisticated. Now you can tell when they're in estrus. You can tell whether the bull is doing his job or not, or he's just being lazy. You know, things like that that we see, we're going to be connecting things that we never thought needed connection before. And that's going to be amazing, you know, and it'll be in the preventative world where, and I think about this all the time, you think about your light bulbs, but it's a reactive thing. Your light bulb burns out, you change your light bulb. How cool would it be to have a light bulb to tell you it's going to burn out next week and automatically ship you a new light bulb? There's just a silly, quick idea that you would get these tiny pieces of data that is all preventative, make your life easier, so you can plan your world a little bit better. I think that's where we're going to see the change in this industry. Is just going to be more and more connected devices, more power at the edge to make local decisions, to make decisions faster. And, you know, we're going to be talking one day down the road about what isn't connected in the world rather than what is connected.
Yes, I tend to agree. I mean, AI in many ways is kind of the obvious answer given this day and age, but you've highlighted particularly in the edge, and that market really has barely got going yet. And the potential for your cow monitoring, as you say, you can put that monitor on the cow, it can decide exactly what that cow is doing, whether it's walking correctly, whether there might be something wrong, whether it's potentially ill, and just sending out a little message, which is the conclusion of that analysis, because the AI is local. So huge potential in there.
Yes.
Pierre, I'd like to come to you, if I can. How do you envisage that customer expectations will evolve?
I'm one of those that really think customer expectation will be more simpler, faster. Like for, I would say, every piece of technology. I'm a firm believer for like the last 15 years, I think, that satellite is following the cellular pattern. And I mean, it had been verified many times, 15 or 20 years ago. We were starting selling big satellite modem to just get 500K in the middle of the desert. And I was already saying that in 5 years after that, we will see smaller modems that get a lot more throughput. And that's it. No, we are talking about Starlink and things like that that give more megabyte than what you can have with your own landline. So I really do think that all kind of technology we have seen on the cellular will land on the satellite, and at the end, this will totally merge so that we will probably not even talk about satellite or terrestrial. So that's clearly the pattern I see, and behind that, the expectation of the user will be that they want more. So they want to do what they were not able to do in the past with satellite. And AI, indeed, I really like the example of Marty. And I would go maybe a step further saying that AI will probably finish the promise that we have all done with our web interface. When we sell in the logistic, for example, we all, I mean, not only me, all my competitors and everyone that is selling web platform, our promise is always you will get insight reports, you will identify quickly what's wrong in your fleet, you will win 30% of margin because of that. To be totally honest, if you don't train people to do this report, if they don't know what kind of information they need to look, they will never perform that. Mm. I've sold numerous of fuel level sensors to a lot of companies because they want it. And then they never use it. They never run a report. They never extract the important information. And I do believe AI will definitely help here to finish this promise, because you will not trigger the report. AI will trigger the report, will isolate what needs to be isolated and what needs to be shown to you. And that's where I think AI will help a lot, because here, I mean, GPS tracking, M2M, IoT, we're speaking about big data. And if you multiplicate that by the number of devices, and specifically if this evolves a lot and we are equipping a lot of machines and equipment, this is even more big data. So yes, AI is definitely the solution to extract the important information of those big data. So I would say the next expectation is definitely that finally, they will use these big data for something else than just saying, well, we put some trackers on the trucks and we know where it is. Well, good. I think the next decade will be, okay, you will know when it will really die and why. And if there's a problem in a part of your geographical area, then we know that, and AI will do that alone. So that's definitely the expectations I see. And I would say that it's just fulfilling the promise we do for years.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you both. I mean, this has been a great discussion so far. What I'd like to do is it's kind of a quick fire round at the end as we run out of time, just to leave the listeners with a few practical takeaways. Pierre, I'm going to start with you, if you don't mind. What's the biggest misconception customers have about satellite IoT today?
I think it's definitely that it's expensive, complex, and only for extreme edge cases, which was probably true 15 or 10 years ago, but today IoT devices are very small, low power, affordable. They deploy in minutes. So not all the manufacturers and all the players industry go into these directions, but Globalstar is definitely, and actually is one of the players that for a lot of years took these directions to have cheap device in terms of price, I'm saying, not in terms of quality. And that's important actually, because they are definitely not cheap in terms of robustness and things. But yes, the economics have changed so much that satellite, it's not exotic options anymore. It's just part of the equation.
Okay, thank you for that. Marty, what's one thing engineers should consider when designing connected infrastructure?
Obviously, the biggest thing that I always stress with people is you need to think about what you need 5 years from now, not what you need today. And that's a difficult question to answer in many cases, because technology does change rather rapidly. So I think you need to set yourself up to be able to migrate with technologies. Don't make a decision that's going to isolate you in a particular technology that perhaps doesn't have a future or isn't being adopted on the terrestrial level. I think we saw that a number of years ago with NB-IoT, which ended up being kind of regional. It didn't take off the same way. So there's certain regions that are shutting down some of that technology. So to make sure that you're kind of technology agnostic as much as you can be, and you're choosing the right solution for the application. You know, Starlink is great, but there's no need to do Starlink to do asset tracking, right? That's a waste of money and a waste of bandwidth, right? And I think we say that, as we talk about, and we've seen in the industry very recently, there is going to be an enormous consolidation of things that's happening through purchases that are happening, that are transactions that are in process. And those transactions are illustrating that the strategy is to be in multiple layers from a satellite perspective, from a multiple technology. So you've got your broadband, you've got your mid-band, and you've got your IoT or the low bandwidth stuff. Each one of those has a place in the marketplace. And the solution that you should be designing is don't always go for more. Choose the right technology for the application that you're trying to do. Because it just doesn't make sense to do things overkill. Last but not least, satellite, you've got to think about power. Power is your ultimate thing. If you don't have power, you have a certain subset of technologies that you can work with. If you've got power, that opens up significantly from there. But that ultimately is why I would say the two biggest things you have to think about.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree about power. That is an extremely important consideration. Pierre, I've got a very challenging question for you, because you've already mentioned some really interesting use cases that very much stand out and would make great stories at a dinner party. What customer success story do you think really continues to stand out?
Complex questions. We have a lot of funny stories, actually. Well, maybe the very recent one, actually, is funny. It's based on a device that Marty was showing, the very small solar one. We have sold that to a French company that sell himself to French department to put that on sheep herds. And the idea is not really to follow sheep herds, actually. It's really to be able to give hikers that are going into the mountain during the summer time so that they can live see where those sheep herds are. And most of all, they're guard dogs. As you might know, there is more and more wolves attack on those sheep herds in the French mountain. So the guard dogs are more and more stressed out, and they are more and more aggressive. And there is also more and more of those guard dogs, and every sheep herds actually do have guard dogs. So it's usually better to not cross them. And the whole project actually is that anyone that goes hiking, they can see this QR code at the beginning of the hiking trail. And that's opening a app, and they can see live where are the sheep herds, where are the guard dogs, and they can see the tolerance and if the trail they're going to take will cross them or not. So it's quite a funny case story, actually. Well, first of all, because it's a nice success story. We have sold like 100 or 200 devices for this project, and there's other French departments that are opening and ordering now. So that's really a success story in terms of business. But I find the idea very funny, because this is kind of things we were definitely not able to do even 2 or 3 years ago, because there was not hardware that were allowing this kind of project. This one is very small. It's 22 grams. There's a small solar panel, and it's perfect for this kind of application. And the last thing that is really standing out, in my opinion, is that it's not really for the farmers. This is really made for the end users and the hikers that go into the mountain. And that's really a safety system too. So I really like this idea of that.
Yeah.
And just to finish this story, they were using LoRa at the beginning of this project, but LoRa do have this kind of limitation. So now that they are mixing LoRa and those Globalstar small solar devices. So that's really great. And I mean, satellite here has really filled the gap without killing the budget.
Yes, and to circle back on a theme from earlier, that's not really the kind of use case which we'd have sat down 10 years ago and imagined that one day would come about. That's just...
No, 10 years ago, the only satellite device we were putting on animals that was mostly wildlife animals, a very expensive collar for very wildlife, or sometimes some wild horse in Kazakhstan and those kind of things, but that was very, very minimal. And we have more and more of this. I just... 3 days ago, we had the requirements to follow camels in the south Morocco, and there's thousands and thousands and thousands of camels to follow.
Excellent. Marty, I'd like to come back to you if I can.
Sure.
If organizations are planning new IoT deployments today, what's one piece of advice you'd offer?
Do your homework. There is a lot of new emerging technologies out there that are shiny, shiny new pennies, but are not necessarily good fits for IoT. You know, we talk about directed device. Directed device is great from a personal perspective.
Yep.
But is the battery on your phone something you can rely on in the middle of nowhere? There are purpose-built devices that are for the hikers and the backpackers that give you multiple weeks worth of battery life, not multiple hours worth of battery life. From an industrial perspective, obviously, think about what you want to accomplish, not just again today, but think about what other things you can put through the same pipe. Think about your customers asking for something to track a trailer. But what else is on the trailer? Can you track temperature? Can you get security with door open, door closed? Can you add value? You know, so you implemented a communication technology, but what other value can you bring into that same ecosystem? And I think from a planning perspective, the more things that you can bring into that, certainly soften the blow of your purchases and your ongoing airtime, but again, bring extra value to that communication path that you've just set up recently to bring other things in there to make yourself more efficient, bring yourself more profits, right-size your fleet, all those things we talked about during the last hour.
Okay. So thank you for that. And as we move to the end of the podcast, I have a final question actually for both of you. So in one sentence, what does resilient connectivity mean to you? Pierre, you first.
Means that network is never the reason you could not make the right decision.
Great. Thank you. Marty?
I would say always there, always available.
Thank you both. So today's conversation has highlighted an important reality. You know, connectivity is no longer simply about network coverage. It's about enabling organizations to operate with confidence in an increasingly complex and unpredictable world. And that could be, you know, whether supporting utilities, transportation, mining, agriculture, energy, government, anything really. Resilient communications are becoming a foundational element of modern infrastructure. So I'd like to thank Pierre Laporte from Tracsat and Marty Jefferson from Globalstar for sharing your insights and experiences.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having us.
And I'd like to thank everyone out there who's been listening in. We hope that today's discussion has proved valuable and provided some interesting insights into how resilient connectivity is shaping the future of industrial IoT and connected infrastructure. Thanks again for joining.